If you're looking to maximize your fundraising efforts, DonorBox's online donation platform is designed to help you reach your fundraising goals with ease. Discover the world of simplified, seamless fundraising at DonorBox.org. DonorBox, helping you help others.
Welcome back to the Nonprofit Hub podcast. I'm your host, Megan Spear, and I am excited to be joining you for another week, along with my guest, Christine Robertson, who's the consulting manager at NPACT. So, Christine, welcome to the podcast. We're glad to have you here.
Thanks, Megan. It's great to be here.
Christine, I know you bring so much experience to the table around all things CRM, all things data. As we're getting ready for this, I had mentioned we've had so many guests so far on the podcast this season talking about the importance of segmentation, right? When it comes to email and direct mail and how we engage our donors. But you can't segment data you don't have, right?
Right, absolutely.
You can't segment data that doesn't exist or that's in a ton of different places or, you know, that's not up to date, right? And so one of the things that I would love for you to kind of share with our audience, let's start here, is what are some of the biggest mistakes that you see nonprofits make with their data and how it's either stored or utilized or managed?
I think there's several. One of the first ones I can see is just not having a plan. I think very often people look at their data as almost the afterthought of their program. You know, we hire intentionally. We need our major gift officers. We need them out in the field. We need them asking for money. And we do. If you're a major gift officer, please don't hate me. I think that's wonderful work and I respect it. But then the data entry and the data selection and all that process. Oh, well, Susie might have extra time on Thursdays and she can do this work when she's not busy. Or the receptionist, which I find ironically, I always hear that. Well, when the receptionist isn't busy, and I always think, have you been a receptionist? Have you watched them? They're the busiest people.
When are they not busy?
When are they not busy? Yeah, they always have something going on. And I say that just to say, I think being a bit strategic of, first and foremost, are you allocating resources to your data? Mm. Is there a person who is going to have dedicated time? And I know they're going to have a lot of hats. I am not saying that to say, oh, you should have a full-time person, because if you're small org, no way, that's not your capacity. But maybe one of your full-time people has an hour every day. I don't know what that looks like, but I think having an intentionality is first and foremost where you start. Beyond having somebody who that they have some time focused for that, I would also say having some time focused on, okay, what data do we now need? So if you're going to do a segmentation, you have to know what's important to you. Mm. And that's different for every organization I work with. So it's not like we can just blanketly say, oh, well, you have to have this, 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 and this to do a segmentation. Because maybe you're an arts organization and your segmentation is based off of people's affinity for different types of music. Then you need to know that in your system. But if you're a K-12, you need to know who's a parent, who's a board member, who is a teacher. So what you're tracking is so unique to who you are and what you do as an organization, but you need to be intentional about what it is and how you're going to use it. So back to the arts example, if we know we need to track people who like different styles of music so we can send them the right emails to let them know about these events or ask them to help fund something, we have to put that somewhere in our system. Where does that go? And so I think a lot of that planning is where I say that, to say, thinking through the whole process of what do we want to know? How are we going to use it? And where are we going to put it? All of that really has to happen before you actually do a segmentation. And I say that all knowing that for somebody who's just getting started, that is a lot that I just threw
at you. A lot to take on, sure.
That's a lot to take on. And I think the reality is, maybe today you start with, okay, we're putting all of our gifts into a system and here's how we're putting them in today. And then tomorrow, maybe looking at, okay, we got our gifts in, we've got a plan. How are we putting our people in the system? And just building on it bit by bit as you can do it, but just being strategic as you build it instead of just throwing it against the wall and seeing what happens.
I love that. So let's take one step back. If the question is, how do I need to, I need to put my gifts into the system. There are countless systems.
There's a few of them out there. Absolutely.
There are countless options out there that run the gamut in terms of price and capacity and levels. And I know we still have organizations that are still tracking gifts on a spreadsheet, right? That's what works for them. But let's say, and that those are kind of maybe the people I want to talk to today. Let's say that the people who have been tracking on a spreadsheet are ready to evaluate, like they need a new system, or they're ready to begin a system from the jump. What are some key elements for them to consider as they evaluate the plethora of options that are out there for them?
Oh, yeah. And there are lots of those options.
Yeah.
I would say, obviously, your budget is a huge consideration. And you can't get around that. I think everyone knows that one. I think knowing your budget helps you look at the different options out there to see which ones are even in your ballpark. And then looking at those options to see, well, what do you really need? I think sometimes it's easy to see all the bells and whistles. And yeah, here the salespeople are wonderful. I have connected with a lot of them, and I respect them, and I enjoy them. But they have a job to do, and it's to sell you something.
Yes.
And so they will sell you on every bell and whistle and every amazing thing that their tool can do. That is their job. So I'm not holding that against them. But do you need all of those things? If you're car shopping, you have to weigh, what do I need? Maybe I just need something that gets me from point A to point B. And the four-door sedan that's not pretty, but reliable, that gets the job done for me. Or maybe I have five kids and I really need a minivan. Well, then it's two different options. And I think car shopping, as much as none of us love car shopping, or at least I don't love car shopping.
I also do not love car
shopping. I was going to say, I don't think it's just me.
No.
I think car shopping is really a good comparison, though, because everybody does have really different needs and budgets. Somebody, sure, some people can afford the Corvette. It is not in my budget. I don't need a Corvette. Okay. And I think it's the same with the CRMs. Some of them are really the Corvettes of fundraising. And yeah, they look great and they do all kinds of fantastic things. But if that's not where you are, you don't need to invest in that today. But one of the advantages to the CRM over a spreadsheet, and I think that's a good place to go back to, is the ability to really get multidimensional data and to be able to track relationships and to get a bigger picture of, okay, this person is a donor. We've sent them this many emails. My major donor officers had coffee with them on this day. You can do that in almost any donor CRM that is reputable and solid. Sure. And I say that to say there are so many that are good and that have that capacity. Start with those, ask around in the industry and see which one works for you. I think the longer I've been in the industry, the more I find that answer is true. There is no CRM that works for everyone.
Sure.
There just isn't. But what one works for you might change in a few years, but getting your data in a system and having a plan for that data in that system will take you a lot farther than trying to make Excel do something it's not made to do.
Yeah. So I like that segue. So let's talk to those people, right? The people who maybe, because what you just said, right, is that you have a system that works for you for now. And a few years from now, that may not be the system that's going to work for where your organization is at that particular time.
Sure.
So as people are growing or as the organization is changing, one of the things that I have seen so many times is people have a database full of information. They don't use it effectively. Mm-hmm. And then they take all of that data that may or may not even be current, and we migrate it over to a new one. But because the salesperson did an excellent job, we expect this new system to just be the answer to all of our problems. But we didn't give it good data in the first place to go off of, right? So we're just moving bad data from one place to another and expecting different results.
Right.
Maybe not. Right. So if somebody's in maybe that mode, right, of I'm getting ready to migrate or I'm looking at new options, talk to me a little bit about that data health. Like what's data worth keeping? How do we keep that data clean? What's important when it comes to data management that way?
Yeah, absolutely. And what you just said right there, you summed up a lot of what I do every day. So not to do a plug or anything, but a lot of people I work with, they migrated from one system to another. If you have bad data when you migrate, it doesn't get better, it gets worse.
Yeah.
Migrations always complicate things because the systems are never exactly the same. So yes, that is a great point. You know, one of the big things I always say start with are your duplicates. And that sounds like a really big, it is really basic. And I think we all talk about it enough that sometimes people neglect to realize how big of a deal it is. Duplicates cost you money in many cases. If your system charges by number of records, they cost you money there. If you're sending mail to the same house, they cost you there. If you anger donors because you send the wrong mailing because they have multiple accounts and you picked the wrong one, they cost you there. So I think it's just always worth, if you have duplicates, work on it. I also say it's like cleaning your kitchen. I don't know about you, but in my house, it does not stay clean very long. It always is a process.
Yes.
You're never done with duplicates, just like you're never done washing your dishes. They slip in no matter how diligent you are. So I say that to say, give yourself grace, but keep doing it. I would say address standardization. If you are doing a bulk mailing, you need to be doing NCOA CAS certification with your post office or with your mail house with the post office. And you also need to use that paperwork to update your addresses in your system. I say paperwork, I should say file, but it should come back to you in CSV. You will save money if you have those addresses standardized. You will better know whose address is still valid. So that saves money, A, on postage if you're standardized. B, it saves money because if you know it's a bad address, don't send it there again.
Yeah.
I know. I mean, that's basic, but it's true. So addresses, that's a big one. Looking at your email addresses, I can't tell you how many times for how many clients I have seen fake@fake.com as an email address or some variation thereof.
Yeah.
Getting those things out of your system so that you're not accidentally trying to send emails there, it just helps your email presence. It just helps your IP address and all of those things. It also helps if you're using email addresses as a matching mechanism, which a lot of systems are doing now, where they use those email addresses as a way to identify donors who've changed names or moved or things like that. Getting rid of the fakes just helps improve all of those things. I think once you get past those are some of the big areas I say everybody needs to look at and constantly look at. I think beyond that, a next level is really building out your communication preference strategy. And that can be a really complicated sounding thing, but really, how do people want to hear from you? When do they want to hear from you? What do they want to hear from you? And I think sometimes we over talk about that and we get so granular that it's like, oh, well, John wants only the spring mailing and Susie wants newsletters every other month. And then we build this system that's hard to manage. But the reality is knowing who doesn't want to hear from you. That's so important. If you have a way to say, these are the people who do not want our mailings. If you can tell me that, you're doing better than a lot of clients that I've started with, because they don't have that part nailed down. So I think knowing who you don't email and who you don't send mail to is critical in building that strategy. You can build it out from there. But honoring people who've said no is really important. A final area I would add to that I think is it's getting deeper in the weeds. Knowing how you want to classify people and how you want to group those people. And I think That is, again, very different depending on your organization type. Even within the same type of organization, there's going to be differences. But a school, you have alumni, you have students, you have parents, you have grandparents. Those are those classifications. How you group some of those will depend on your report, but what groups are important to you? Do you need to have staff? Do you need to have board members? Once you know who you need in those groups, making sure you have it tracked consistently across your system, making sure that everyone who needs to know how to do that and run a report on that is able to do that within your system. Obviously, all of that does take time, and it does take an organization building that out. So don't expect you're going to build that out next Tuesday in a day and have it all done.
Sure.
But those are areas and places where over time, if you keep working at, how do we do this? Okay, we've kind of got our duplicates under control. Now let's keep going down the list. You'll see progress in your data.
Elevate your fundraising strategy effortlessly with DonorBox, the online fundraising platform that streamlines your operations, amplifies donations, and delivers a user-friendly experience for your supporters. Design captivating donation forms, accept digital wallet payments, seamlessly monitor donations, and automate receipt generation. Joining is a breeze with no setup or monthly fees. From customizable donation forms and 4 times faster, ultra-swift checkout to seamless in-person giving, with DonorBox Live Kiosk, DonorBox makes giving simple and fast for your donors. Visit DonorBox.org and unlock your full fundraising potential today.
I want to go back to one of the things you said around making sure that you update from that NCOA, right?
Yes.
Because I think a lot of people tend to... I do see a lot of orgs that run it against their file, mm-hmm. and then they miss that step, right? So they're getting the same information back every time they run a list against it. Mm-hmm. Is, from your perspective, if we're talking, especially when it comes to mailing, because mm-hmm. I have talked to people who get 7 or 8 mailings from the same organization every time they mail stuff out. So the cost benefit has to be there, right?
Absolutely.
To cut those things out.
Yes.
So what process would you suggest in terms of like making that the easiest possible to get those folks out?
So different systems are going to have some different functionality. So I will say that just as the caveat before what I say, just in case your system doesn't have this functionality. Most of the CRMs I've worked in would have the ability where if you export out when you do your mailing list, add something like a constituent ID, record ID, whatever it is in your system that identifies that particular contact record. That would allow you to keep that number on that spreadsheet when you send it to the mailhouse. And every time I've gotten it back from a mail house, I get my file back with the new address. It still has that ID number that I left on the file in the first place.
Great.
When you have that ID in place, what that means is that you can then do an import back into your system to say, okay, these are the people where the address is changed. So in all the systems I've worked in, what that means is I can easily say, okay, let's add these new addresses to the system so we have them. For the people that don't have new addresses, I can do a second import that says, mark these people as I don't have an address anymore. That kind of an information. Mm. It does require you to learn how to do that in your system. If you don't have a huge quantity of addresses, then maybe you can skip the import piece and just open the constituent records and change them. And there's no shame if that's what you need to do. But if you're looking at several hundred or thousand, which oftentimes people are talking about that in bigger organizations.
Sure.
And learning to import would be a good step too. Learning how your system allows you to do some of those bulk changes would be important.
I also want to go back to something that you had said about email and ask a question here, right? Because I know for a lot of organizations, where the email information lives in the CRM doesn't really talk to wherever, you know, MailChimp or whatever email system they're using, and maybe donor development owns the CRM and maybe marketing owns the email system, and those things don't often talk to each other. Do you have some tips for folks who may have data like emails in multiple places for keeping that side of it healthy?
So I think that is definitely where, as a team, you have to coordinate, because if my email is on marketing's list and I unsubscribe, mm-hmm. and development goes in and sends me an email, you do run a risk there.
Yeah.
Especially with GDPR and with legislations in places like California, we all have to be more and more diligent that we are honoring. If nothing else, we have to honor these unsubscribes.
Yes.
I think other communications are important, but the unsubscribes are something we just can't afford to miss. Yeah. So whether that's building a practice of once a month or however often works for you, you collaborate internally to say, here are all the people who've unsubscribed on the marketing side from this month. Make sure you update in development. And I think the reverse is true as well. If you're on development side and you have unsubscribes, you need to get those to marketing. Because if John Jones called angry and said, don't talk to me ever again, and the marketing turns around and sends him an email next week,
nope.
That's not going to go well. So depending on what tools you have, there are lots of integration pieces out there. For a season, I worked at a company that sold some of those, so I'm very familiar with them. But on that level, if you're a smaller organization, I don't think you need to buy something, as long as you are making sure you are communicating and you're not allowing silos internally to keep you from honoring that kind of a wish.
Yeah. And are we starting to see the same thing with cell phone numbers? I know a lot of orgs are moving to text. There's not necessarily the GDPR legislation around that yet, but do you see that coming? Is text something that we should be kind of following the same rules for?
I think so. I know I've seen some people working a bit more with the text messaging.
Yeah.
And I'm seeing that not, depending on what tool you're in, whether or not that's in your tool or not. It's definitely worth, I think, building out your system so that any way you're communicating, you are collaborating internally to make sure that that's important, that's tracked. Similarly, I mean, I'm really be focusing on the negative of an unsubscribe, but at the same time, let's say you connect with somebody who's really excited about your organization. They want to know more. They want to be part of everything you're doing. We want to make sure that's across the board too.
Sure.
So it's easy to focus on the negative, and I don't want to say there's way more exciting things happening in our world of nonprofits. Yeah. But that internal sharing of knowledge of people and relationships, because ultimately this is not about donations. This is about relationships with people who are partnering with you. And how do you honor whatever the level of partnership they want?
Yeah. Well, and that's the relationship manager, right? That's the point of the CRM.
Exactly.
We tend to talk about CRM without really
realizing. It's relationship.
It is managing relationships. That is in the name. It's what it's for. And we tend to maybe gloss over that with just using the acronym for it all the time. But that is the key. Totally. And to bring that full circle, it's hard to do on a spreadsheet.
And that's not what spreadsheets were made to do. I use them every day. They have their place. I don't think you'll get away from them even when you have a CRM, but that's not what they're made to do.
Okay. So as we wrap up, this has all been super helpful, Christine. I think everyone's going to have some really good takeaways. But as we wrap up, I just want to ask one question from your kind of seat in the data world. Let's assume that somebody has done all the things correctly. They have a great CRM that fits their needs. The data is healthy. We're deduping regularly. We're updating those records. We're doing all the things. What's kind of the next level there, right? Once you have really good data, what's the next step of the strategy to make sure that you're using it effectively?
I think that's when you get to have a lot more fun with data. as far okay. as that's when
not
you
normally two data and fun are not normally I know, two I know. To go together.
Well, yeah, I'm not cool maybe like that
for me. Okay. Maybe.
But I think the piece to that is that's when you can really work in that segmentation. You can really start to do. One of my clients that I had years ago was in an area. It was in the Louisville, Kentucky area. And there's a huge rivalry between University of Louisville and University of Kentucky. And this is a lot of background for this story, but it's relevant.
Yeah.
And one of their fun promotions they did every year was when those two schools played each other in basketball. The CEO and the CFO had their own competition to see whose fans could raise more money for the mission.
Mm.
And so the CEO would email everyone who, I forget who liked which team. So if they're listening to this, I am so sorry if I get this backwards, but the CEO would email all the U of L fans and say, come on, we got to get U of L to the finish line. And the CEO or CFO would email all the UK fans and do the same thing. And it was really fun to watch how they each tried to, you know, oh, wait, so-and-so's a fan. I've got to get them on my team. And it had so much natural energy and excitement. Obviously, that is unique to them. And it worked great for them in that location. But they could only do that because they did have a lot of good data of who went to what school, who has connected with us last, who gave last year to support U of L, who gave last year to support to UK. Their data manager, when she would enter gifts, would watch to see whose checks had U of L and UK emblems on them, because
oh, wow.
if you care enough about the school to get checks with that, then you are a good prospect for this challenge. And so I say that not to say everyone should look for that specific kind of a challenge, but just to say you can't get to that point until you've built out your structure and you've done that. But they got to that point, and it was fun to watch how excited everybody got. And it was fun to watch the collaboration between marketing and development and the whole thing to come full circle and raise money for a wonderful cause and an amazing mission. So that's where I say, I know it's not really fun to most people, but it can be when it's good and when you've got all the pieces together.
Yeah. So definitely worth the work.
It's worth the work. It absolutely is.
Excellent. Well, as we wrap up, Christine, first of all, thank you for being here. If somebody wanted to reach out to you and find out more information either about you or your work at Impact, how do we find you and how do we connect?
Sure. So I am on LinkedIn. So happy to connect with anyone there. But I also, you can email me at crobertson@impact.com.
Excellent. Thank you so much, Christine. We really appreciate you being here. Again, this is Christine Robertson from NPACT has been my guest today, talking all things data and the importance of it. So Christine, thanks for joining us on the Nonprofit Hub podcast. We'll see you next time.
Thank you, Megan.